Welcome to the 2024 season for Explore Yellowstone Like a Local, the number one podcast for Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks and home to the top-rated guidebook of the same name. And I'm your author as well as your host for this and all the other podcasts as well as the videos, Teddy Garland. And this podcast is one that is listed in the guidebook for you to listen to if you want to hear some fun stories. And there's a good fun story in this one about the roads you'll be driving on doing the one-day adventure that you selected from the guidebook. And in the guidebook, you selected Bear and Wolf Day on the North Loop. So we kind of cover looking for bears and wolves and tackle the entire North Loop in one chapter in the guidebook. And this basically takes all day. So we're kind of glossing over what is in the guidebook and telling you guys some fun stories as you guys drive along. So the guidebook has been called the best guidebook ever written for Yellowstone Park and a must-have for any trip to Yellowstone and even the Bible for Yellowstone Park. So if you guys are thinking about getting a guidebook for your Yellowstone vacation and you want some more information before you purchase one, simply listen to my podcast, Introduction to Explore Yellowstone Like a Local, or you can watch the YouTube video of the same name. And there you will learn of my family's over 100-year history in Yellowstone Park and how I am one of the most foremost authorities in Yellowstone Park, and you'll discover how easy the guidebook is to use, giving you step-by-step instructions so you can self-guide yourself through the park looking for bears and wolves today, and how the guidebook breaks the enormous size of Yellowstone Park down into manageable bites that you can easily and enjoyably do in a single day. And we're doing the North Loop in that chapter in the guidebook, which takes all day. And by following my tips on flights, lodging, and dining, you can save thousands of dollars on your Yellowstone vacation. And I highly recommend anybody listening to this podcast join our Explore Yellowstone Like a Local Facebook group, where you will see hundreds of sparkling reviews for the guidebook, as well as thousands of pictures that you guys have posted of you guys having a great time in Yellowstone Park with the help of the guidebook. And there are hundreds of pictures of you guys seeing bears and stuff in the park. In fact, we had one guy see 12 bears in the park, and he has posted all those pictures last year for you guys to see, and all he did was follow the tips in the guidebook. So to get your copy, simply go to our website, exploreyellowstonelikealocal.com, where you can get an electronic copy for only $12 or a paperback copy for $25. And I write a personal note to everyone who buys one and throw in a cool Yellowstone sticker as well. And there's some combo deals on there that are very popular, where you can get an electronic and a paperback copy as well. And we have a store on there. It's got some neat swag on there, some cool Yellowstone stuff and trucker's hats and all that. And for the 2024 season, the guidebook is nearly 20% longer than the 2023 version, so you guys get a lot more fun stuff to go through there. And I completely rewrote the most popular chapter, which is the hiking chapter. So, and also be aware that we only print off 1,000 paperback copies of the guidebook every year, and in 2023, we sold out in August 10th or so. So we will sell out then or earlier with our growing popularity. So if you want a paperback copy, be sure and order it now. And if you're picking up on these podcasts and you're already up in the Yellowstone area, you're already up there in West Yellowstone, you can pick up a paperback copy at the Book Peddler in West Yellowstone or West Park Outdoors, and we send them a few copies every year for people to pick up that are already there that want a paperback copy. So let's get rolling with this podcast. This is Grizzly Bear and Wolf Day, and bison's thrown in for a little icing on the cake. From Tower Junction up the Northeast Entrance Road, just past Pebble Creek, and that's about as far as we want to go. There is never going to see any bears or wolves past Pebble Creek, so let's go find us big, badass grizzly bears. All right, so say you guys are sitting there at Tower Junction. Remember, Tower Junction is a little bit misleading. Tower Falls is about a mile or two down the road east. You're really at the Tower Junction Roosevelt Stables is where you're parked at. There's a little gas station right there, a little janky gas station. And then the Roosevelt Stables are right behind that little gas station. So there's really not a lot of stuff here. I think they have some refrigerator in there with some pops and stuff in it, but there's not a lot to do here at Tower Junction. It's not much of a stop. It's just an intersection basically for everybody to go. However, In the guidebook, you're going to find information about this chuck wagon cookout that they do from those Roosevelt stables. And like I tell you guys, in the guidebook, riding horses in the park sucks. It's not worth doing. There's a lot better places to ride horses right outside of Yellowstone Park, and I list those in the guidebook. I've got an entire chapter devoted to horseback riding in the guidebook, so you guys can find some really great places to go ride horses right outside of Yellowstone Park. Inside the park, it's just dusty, nose to tail and all that, and you're just with, you know, 80 other people and you have no idea who they are and everybody's just getting dusted out. And there's some great places to go with just your group or your family right outside the park and some better views, the views of the Tetons and the whole nine yards. So just read that chapter in the guidebook. The only thing that they do really well out of this location is in the evening they do this chuck wagon cookout. All the information is in the guidebook, but you can ride in the original old yellow stagecoaches that they use in Yellowstone Park before the automobile was invented. And I mean, they are the real McCoy, the real deal. There's only a handful of them, so you got to make sure you get in those. Otherwise, you're just going to get stuck in this old yellow wagon with, you know, car tires on the side of it. So that's a really cool deal, but all the information is in the guidebook to do it. And you get out there in this big meadow, it's called Pleasant Valley, and you get this old guy up there and he gets all the kids over there gathered around and he's telling them about a bear attack that happened in 1955 and killed three people and all this stuff, and it was old Snaggletooth and all this kind of yada yada, and you just got these kids down there. You got to remember, their cell phones don't work, so they're not sitting there on their cell phone screwing around, and they're listening to this old man with a big white beard, you know, regale them of stories of how these bear killed all these people and they never did find him and, you know, all this stuff. It's really a fun deal. But all the information's in the guidebook how to do that cookout dinner. But that's about the only thing at this Tower Junction. There's not a lot there. But if you can book that cookout deal, do it. It's really hip. And then so from Tower Junction, you guys got to remember you're going north. You know, Tower Falls, it's kind of misleading. Everybody relates the word tower to Tower Falls, but Tower Falls is further east. Now we are heading north-northeast up towards the northeast entry roads up there. You're heading out of the park to Silvergate and Cook City, which you never want to bother with. We're going to stop at Pebble Creek. There's nothing to see in Yellowstone Park past Pebble Creek. So, all right, so there from the Roosevelt Stables, from the gas station, just go north, and you're going to head north like you're heading up the Northeast Entrance Road. And within about, God, 3 or 4 blocks, the road drives down, just drops right down to the Yellowstone River, and it's just cooking it through here, just rolling. It's really, really, really hard to get down to the Yellowstone River without doing a bunch of big hiking. But in the guidebook, I tell you how to get down to it up there by Tower Falls. There's a one good spot, really easy spot to get down to the Yellowstone River, but I covered it in the guidebook, and it's up there by Tower Falls. And make note for the 2024 season that there is a huge road construction project going on through here. They are putting in a new bridge over the Yellowstone River a little bit to the right of the existing one. And I think the old one was damaged in the floods of 2022. But anyway, this is a big, big project that's going to take multiple years to complete. So you guys just allot yourself a little extra time through here. But as you cross over the river right there, look on your left right through there and you should see some bighorn sheep. This is a good place to see some bighorn sheep right through there. And then right at the top of the construction area. I hope they still have it open for the 2024 season. I'll take a look when I get there and let you guys know when I do my spring report of what's open and closed in the park. And they may be using this little picnic area parking lot to store materials. I kind of got the sneaking suspicion that's where they were headed when I was there last fall. But this is a great starting point for a short little hike that's suitable for even the smallest hiker in your group and gets you to some magnificent views of the Narrows area of the Yellowstone River down through there. But again, I cover that in the hiking chapter in the guidebook for you guys. If you guys got a little hiker that wants to see some great views, that I've got that listed in the guidebook for you guys. So, but keep your eye open for that road construction through there and just allot a little more time. On up the road a little bit, and you're going to, right past that picnic area, you're going to crest this hill, and you're going to be in the first or lower Lamar Valley. And this little drive here for the next 3 or 4 or 5 miles to me is just gorgeous. Real flat section. And this is where a huge glacier went through back in the Ice Age and dumped these house-sized boulders everywhere. I mean, the small ones were as big as Suburbans. All through here. And it's just a gorgeous valley. Bison always hanging out around here and everything else. This is one of my favorite drives in all of Yellowstone Park is through this first Lamar Valley or lower Lamar Valley. On up the road, and remember, I have not forgotten, we are hunting grizzly bears and wolves today. You can see grizzly bears through here, but on up the road is pretty much where you're going to start. Before we get to that first area, right before you cross the Lamar River on a bridge right there, the Lamar River will come in on your right, go under the bridge. There's always bison hanging out right through here as well, especially on the left. Look for a kind of a dirt pullout on your right over there, and it's about 6 or 8 cars can sit in that dirt pullout. That is the trailhead for Specimen Ridge. And Specimen Ridge is the largest petrified forest on Earth. And I cover all this in the hiking chapter in the guidebook, so I'm not going to get into it here, about how difficult it is and all that stuff and what you're going to see when you get up there. But it's kind of an interesting spot. If you guys will think about it real quick, those trees that are petrified trees up there, they were dogwoods and maples and all that kind of stuff. And so you got to think about how warm it was to grow those trees 38 million years ago. So you're talking about global warming, but then also you're driving through a glacially strewn valley. So you got to think about global cooling. You know, so it's kind of an interesting spot that kind of contradicts each other with what you're looking at and seeing in that area. You know, there's a great picture in the guidebook of Lisa and I up on that hill up there with the lower Lamar Valley up below us. It's a beautiful spot, you guys. Really, really worth a hike. So if you want to go up and see the largest petrified forest on Earth, all the information's in the guidebook about how to get up there. All right, and soon after that, you will cross over the Lamar River on a bridge and then go up to the top of the hill and look for this little dirt road on your left. And this is the Slough Creek Drainage Road, and you guys want to take this road. And you're going to kind of crest over that hill right there, and you're just going to see dozens and dozens of cars pulled over all over the place. It's even hard to find a parking spot through here. And this is a great place to see grizzly bears and wolves off in the distance, off on the hill back to the west. And this is where a lot of professional photographers ply their trade back over here. I mean, you'll see people posted up with a folding picnic table with an umbrella over the top of it, sitting around it with some spotting scopes sitting next to them, and they will be there all day long waiting for a wolf or a bear or something to pop their heads out of a hole or around a tree 500 or 800 or 1,000 yards away. But they've got these big badass spotting scopes with their cameras attached to them, so they're looking to get a really good picture, and then they're going to go sell it. So, you know, this isn't my cup of tea. And I think there's better places to look. But in the guidebook, I send you guys down here just in case there might be one close enough to the road for you guys to see with the naked eye. However, everybody in the park is always really nice, and they always let you look at something. So if you pull over there and there's a bunch of people set up and they're not just milling around, if they're milling around, they don't have anything. But if everybody's down on their scopes or got all their binoculars out looking in one area, then they've generally got something. Just find a place to park. Go over there and ask them what they've got. And if somebody's got something, they'll let you look through their spotting scope. And if they're nice enough, like I am, when I take my spotting scope, that's what I'll do. You can put your phone down on there and take a picture of whatever they're looking at through that spotting scope and make that bear look like he's 50 feet away instead of 500 yards away. So, but just drive down this road and you'll see, you go down there about a mile and it dead ends, and that's a great hiking spot and great fishing spot to go to the Slough Creek drainage over there. But I cover that in the hiking chapter. I'm not going to get into it here, but just drive down through there and go see what you can see. Generally, all of the bears are pretty far off and the wolves are pretty far off. Just use somebody's spotting scope, take a couple pictures, and then leave. So I'm not going to stay there all day long and wait for a bear or a wolf to pop their heads out of some hole 1,000 yards away. That's just not for me. I'm not going to do that. And so what I always do is I just drive down there and I drive back. And remember, you're going to come back down this road in about an hour so you can go back and do it again. So after I've gone down through there and asked everybody if they've got anything and gotten out and looked at a couple things if they've got anything, I'll just turn around, get back on the main park road and turn left, and then I'll go on up to the next meadow, which is the upper Lamar Meadow up there, and I'll go see what I can find up there. And you never know, right up the road a little bit, there might be a bear with two cubs milling around over there, and nobody knows about it because they're over there waiting for a wolf to pop his head out 1,000 yards away. But you just drive up the road a couple blocks and bam, there's a bear with cubs right there. So I only make that loop, come back out, hit the main road, go see what I can find. Right after you get on the main park road again, you'll be heading northeast and quickly come into the Lamar Canyon that separates the two Lamar Valleys. You got the first or lower Lamar Valley, and then right after the Lamar Canyon is the upper or second Lamar Valley. That Lamar Canyon right there is gorgeous. That river is getting it right through there. And there's a couple pullouts. Pull off to your right and take a quick picture. It's really, really pretty. It's a nice little picture spot right through there. And then you'll quickly pop out, and the second or upper Lamar Valley will open out in front of you. Before you get to the Yellowstone Institute, I want to tell you guys a funny story about this stretch of road right here. It's between the Lamar Canyon, right when that second meadow opens up, and before you get to the Yellowstone Institute. And there's a lot of great stories in the guidebook, but this is one of those stories that's pretty lengthy and it's just too long to put in the guidebook. So, okay, so if anybody that's listening to this podcast ever heard the story about Forrest Fenn, there's this guy who lived in Santa Fe, and his name is Forrest Fenn, and Forrest Fenn ran this janky little curios, jewelry, turquoise shop, and it was basically going out of business. So in 2010, he comes up with the really great marketing idea to write this poem about a box of golden jewels and a solid gold box, no less, buried somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. And having grown up and worked in Yellowstone Park and in West Yellowstone, and because of that, virtually everyone thought it was buried in Yellowstone Park. Part of the poem says, you know, where the warm waters hit the cold and all this kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. Everybody thought it was over there by Grand Prismatic. You couldn't drive along the edge of Grand Prismatic. There's a big hill off to the left of the highway right there. There'd always be 3 or 4 cars and people up there digging around on that hill thinking that gold box was buried on that hill. This caused the rangers in Yellowstone National Park a litany of problems and headaches and people digging stuff up and getting hurt and this and that and the other. And this is one of those stories. So this guy, he was a police officer in Seattle. And he wasn't the only one that did this. I mean, there was doctors in Dallas and surgeons in Atlanta and attorneys in New York and all these. And these guys got so infatuated with this hunt of finding this gold box that they lost everything. Their businesses, their wives divorced them. They lost all their money and everything else. And so this is going to be a story about one of those people who was a police officer in Seattle. He's been digging around in Yellowstone Park for years. And I read this story in Outside Magazine. And so this guy, after about his third or fourth trip to Yellowstone every year for the last 7 years, he's lost everything. His wife's divorced him. He's no longer on the force. He's borrowed money from everybody he can because he lost his job. He's just convinced that he's going to find this golden box filled with diamonds and jewelry and all this stuff. So, but like Forrest Fenn actually had that in the first place. His store was about to go out of business in Santa Fe. So that's the first catch. Where did the guy get all the gold and jewels and everything else? He's broke. So that's the first huge red flag. The box was supposedly filled with $2 million+ worth of gold coins and rubies and turquoise and stuff that's not worth a whole lot of money. And this box was like 2 inches tall by 4 inches deep by about 5 inches wide. I mean, you're going to have to get a whole bunch of turquoise in this box to reach the $2 million mark. I mean, and there's supposedly these old coins and stuff in there. It's just a farce. The whole thing was a farce. There are so many holes in this whole Forrest Fenn deal. However, completely turned his business around in Santa Fe, and I mean hundreds and thousands of people are now out hunting around for this stupid box, which I'm convinced never, ever, ever existed. But this one guy, this police officer, after digging around all through Yellowstone Park, getting thrown in jail a few times, because it's illegal to dig in Yellowstone Park. You can't do it. You can't take anything out of Yellowstone Park. You can't dig in Yellowstone Park, can't do anything. But that didn't stop anybody. And the Park Service just getting ramrodded with all these people looking for that idiotic Forrest Fenn treasure, and because they all thought it was up there in Yellowstone Park, because he had worked in the park. He'd worked in West Yellowstone. His family's from up there. One of my best friends is his nephew. So anyway, this guy was convinced, dug around everywhere else he thought it was in Yellowstone Park. His last hurrah, he's in Seattle, and he goes to his buddy and says, "Hey, will you go get me a rental car?" The guy goes, "Come on, man, just give it up." And he goes, I'm not going back to Yellowstone. I'm going to go do this and that. I lost my car and everything else. I don't have any way to get around. I'm going to go try to find a job." Well, that was just a ruse. He's on his way back to Yellowstone. And so he goes, "Sure." And he goes, "Hey, can I borrow a little money for gas and whatever?" And the guy goes, "Okay, man, okay." So he loans him some money, and he goes and gets him a rental car. And of course, he just drives out of Seattle and heads to Yellowstone Park. And he is convinced that this trip is going to be the trip where he finds the box. And it's right there when you got into that second Lamar Valley, to your right, across the Lamar River, and over there at the base of that hill. Basically straight across the meadow from where you guys are parked or driving right now. So he goes to Walmart and Bozeman. And buys an inflatable raft of some flavor, a couple little plastic oars, and he's got all his crap and his digging tools and everything else. And he goes to Yellowstone in early May. And, you know, park opens the third week in April, so he's there in, like, the first week or two after the park opened, because he's going to beat everybody to it so somebody doesn't get to the treasure before he does anything else. Well, that early in the season, that Lamar River right there to your guys' right is just absolutely hooking it, man. I mean, it is Whitewater City. So he gets there 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening and pulls over at one of those pullouts that you guys are driving by right by on your right before he used to get to the Yellowstone Foundation. And so he pulls that stupid inflatable raft out of the back of his car. He's over there blowing on it, you know. And he blows that thing up, and that Lamar River's right there next to the road, up the road. He goes, "All right, this is it," you know, and he launches himself in that Lamar River. Well, he doesn't make it 12 feet, flips that sumbitch over. Everything's gone. Everything he owns is in the river, and that river's just, I mean, right above freezing, because it's ice melt. I mean, it is, you know, literally ice chunks coming down that thing that early in the year, and it's brown and dirty and fast and getting it and everything else. He just goes, all right, you know, he figures out real quick that he's going to die. And so he is paddling for shore, but he is not to be deterred. He paddles for the opposite shore across the river, the current of the river, on the meadow side, not the roadside. And he washes up over there. You know, what the hell am I going to do now? Sitting there and he's just freezing cold. He can't swim back across. He's going to get carried downstream into that Lamar Canyon down there and get killed. And so he decides to go over there and see if he can find that box. He walks across that Lamar Valley. It's getting dark. You know, it gets dark fast, man. He walks over there and gets over there in the trees and everything. And all his stuff's gone. His lights are gone. His flashlight's gone. Everything's gone. He finds a log, and he's starting to dig around with a log. Pretty soon, he starts getting freezing to death because his clothes are all wet and everything else. And so he's sitting there, and he has to spend the night out in the cold. He walks back over to the river. Now it's pitch black. You're not going to swim across that river. You're just going to get killed. I mean, that thing's rolling. And so he's just there, and he gets in a little low spot that a bison has wallowed out and just, you know, curls up to get out of the wind, thinking he's going to die. Well, he doesn't die that night, and he gets up the next morning, and there's some cars driving by.
He's up there with his shirt off, waving in the air. I surrender. Just all this shit. And so the Purple Ranger comes by. They get somebody to go over there and get him. You go up there to the Soda Butte turnout about a mile up the road, and there's a footbridge you can get across right there. Well, he's a dumbass. He didn't know that. So, he thought he had to float across the Lamar. But they went on horseback over there, and they get him, and they bring him back up there to the Soda Butte turn to pull out over there, and they arrest him for boating in the river, camping illegally, digging in the park, because he's already been arrested about half a dozen times, been in front of the magistrate for months in jail already for this whole deal. And his rental car was reported stolen. He ends up going to jail for like 2 years. I just can't believe it. But I'm telling you guys, this was the norm. He was not alone. This guy had hundreds of compatriots just like this. It's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, lo and behold, in 2022, the box was supposedly found. And first, it was found by a little fat guy in New York. And after a little questioning, that quickly fell apart. And then he kind of disappears. And then it's found again, not too far from my house, up by Lake Hebgen. That story falls apart pretty quickly. And then all of a sudden, some kid from Pittsburgh finds it. And then he actually posts a picture of a gold box with some old coins and stuff in it. I looked at the picture, and if there's more than $5,000 worth of crap in that box, I will eat your hat. I'm telling you what, this whole thing was just a farce. So here's what happened. What really happened is that four people got killed looking for this box. Four people lost their lives, and hundreds of people lost their livelihoods and everything else, and thousands of people got injured. So the families of the deceased and the others all started filing lawsuits against Forrest Fenn and his estate. So when all of that started coming around, this little ploy to increase sales at his little jewelry shank shop in Santa Fe began to get turned around real quickly into a not-so-welcome giant set of lawsuits and attorney's fees and everything else. So, yeah, when all that started happening, this thing came to a quick conclusion. And then right after that, Forrest Fenn himself dies and just left his estate and his family to fight all of these lawsuits. And, I mean, they're getting sued for tens upon millions of dollars because, I mean, four people got killed. And what started out as a really good idea to turn around a failing business with some new influx of business, some new free advertising, turned into people getting killed and hundreds, if not thousands, of people getting injured and lawsuits galore. And then, of course, Forrest Fenn passes away and leaves his family to fight all the stuff. It's actually a sad story.
But, you know, you guys are now looking at the spot where that guy tried to raft down there on a little inflatable raft. Can you just see him out there? Those little 6-inch paddles trying to get across that river. You know, just upside down immediately. You know, some giant guy out there on a little kid's raft that's supposed to go in a wading pool. Anyway, I just thought that was so funny that you guys are now at the exact spot that occurred. So, and this upper, so that's the end of that story. Okay, so much with Forrest Fenn there. He's dead and his family's fighting all these lawsuits and yeah. So anyway, once you pass the Yellowstone Institute, now this upper or second Lamar Valley to me is not nearly as pretty as the first or lower Lamar Valley back over there. There's no glacial strewn boulders anywhere and everything else, but there's always tons of bison through here. And again, what you're looking for, and there's grizzly bears through here that hang out over there to the right on that hill over there where that guy thought that treasure was buried over there.
And what you'll see along this stretch of the road, it's about a mile, mile and a half long. It's just a series of pullouts on the right. And you'll see cars pulled over and people out there with spotting scopes and people out there with binoculars. And they're all looking out in that meadow. There'll be people on the left side of the road looking back up that hill over there to the left. And again, this is a great place to see grizzly bears and wolves. And a good tip for seeing a wolf is a lot of the wolves are collared. At least, some, you know, one of the big males in a group is collared. So you'll see somebody out there that works for the Yellowstone Institute or for the National Park Service. They'll have a big set of headphones on, and they'll be holding up a microphone. Looks like a small satellite dish. And they'll be holding that thing up. Well, stop and pull them over, and they'll tell you if they've got a radio signal for a wolf that's nearby or a wolf pack that's nearby. And if they do, he'll say, yeah, they're over that hill, but they're working their way this way or something like that. So you guys can hang out and look, see if a wolf pack shows up or something. This is it. This is how you're going to see bears and wolves in this upper valley. So the hot spot for grizzly bears is back on that Slough Creek Road, all through here, all the way from Tower Junction, all the way up to Pebble Creek, which we haven't gotten to yet, is prime grizzly bear and wolf area. So you're going to keep going on the road. You're going to go past the Soda Butte Turnout. There's some restrooms here if you need to use the restroom, but it's just a pullout area. There's nothing here. And the trail's not any good either. It's not worth walking down that trail. And continue up Soda Butte. Now, after the turnoff, the Soda Butte is not at the turnoff. It is about a block up the road to the north on the right. That is Soda Butte. And it's a defunct small volcano that used to have water pouring out the top of it right on the side of the road. It's not, you can take a picture from your car if you want to, but there's nothing there to see. About a mile up the road on the left, and again, keep your eye open through here. The Lamar Valley, the second Lamar Valley, is kind of gradually coming to a point. Up at Trout Lake, you'll see a little turnoff for Trout Lake. And Trout Lake's not worth seeing. It's just a little lake. It's about 5 minute walk off the road right there, and it's just a little circular lake. However, Trout Lake bears its name because it is loaded with trout. I've hooked a bunch of trout. You can't keep any fish that you catch in Yellowstone Park. It's all catch and release only. But back in the day when the Army was in Yellowstone Park protecting the borders and keeping poachers out back at the turn of the century, after the park was named a national park in 1872, about the only people that were in the park was the Army people kind of keeping the bison safe and the elk safe from poachers and all that kind of stuff. They were fed by fish out of Trout Lake. I don't know why there's so many fish in Trout Lake, but there is. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You can just go over there with a fly rod and throw it out there and just kablooey. You catch a fish instantly. So Trout Lake's got it going on as far as catching fish, but for some reason, it's still loaded with trout. But it's not worth walking back there to see or anything else. However, Pebble Creek, which is about a mile up the road on the left, is worth a stop. So once you get to the Pebble Creek campground turnoff, pull in there and park, and there's a parking spot right there to the right, kind of faces the little creek of Pebble Creek right there. There's no bears or anything right there, but what I do want you to see, and I cover this in the guidebook again, is Pebble Creek. If you walk up the creek right there, you can get to an area where the creek has eroded the canyon walls, and you can see fossilized fish and seashells and stuff in the white walls right there of Pebble Creek. All this area was under the ocean. Pretty incredible, huh? So, and there's a great picture in the guide, but that Pebble Creek's worth a stop to look and see where you're actually looking at the ocean floor right in front of your eyes, and there's just stuff laid all over the ground. On your way back to the car from that tiny little Pebble Creek Canyon, I mean, you're talking a 3 minute walk from the car up to Pebble Creek to see the bottom of the ocean in the back of the car. If you're there in May and June and look straight across at the Thunderer, this is a big, big peak mountain right there across the road, right across the road from you as you're walking back to your car. In the spring months, when there's snow melt on top of the mountain right there, there are some 1,000-plus-foot waterfalls coming off those peaks right there in those little canyons. I mean, those waterfalls are plunging well over 1,000 feet, and there's 4 or 5 of them that run right down through there. It's incredible. You can't really get over there and see them, but if you've got a good set of binoculars and you can kind of sit there and post up at your car, it's incredible. There are some enormous, amazingly tall seasonal waterfalls coming off the Thunderer straight across from your car at the Pebble Creek parking area. It's just unreal. So, and right past Pebble Creek, Round Prairie is off kind of to your right, and it's just a short little spot, and that's it. That is the last spot you're going to see wolves or grizzly bears in
this entire section of road. You can keep going on up northeast to Silvergate and Cook City and Icebox Canyon's right up the road a little bit. There's a little weird spot about half a mile up the road on the right called Icebox Canyon, and it stays so cold in that one little spot because the sunlight never, ever, ever gets in there. There is ice on the canyon walls for the last millennia, only about 100, 150 feet long. You can see it from the road, but you can pull off and look at it. But it's called Icebox Canyon, and there is just ice on both sides of the canyon wall forever. That's about the last thing to see up there. There's nothing on up to see. And Silvergate and Cook City are just tiny, sleepy little towns with very little to offer. There's a each town has maybe one hotel, one bar, one half of a restaurant type of deal. They are little, tiny, sleepy little towns that are just really, really not worth the drive. However, past Silvergate and Cook City is the start of the Beartooth Highway, which is just the number one scenic drive in the United States. Voted that over and over and over again. It's a 68-mile stretch of road that starts right there at Silvergate and Cook City. It's only open in for about 3 months out of the year because it's so high. It's the highest road in the Rockies in the United States. It is a gorgeous road. Jack Kuralt, anybody that's older in your group's going to know who that guy is. He kind of traveled around in a motorhome and went to all these weird places, and he was kind of attached to 60 Minutes, I think, there for a while. But he went, and he's the one that found that Beartooth Highway and made it famous. When he went there back in the 50s and 60s, and he ends up being one of the original founding movie stars or TV personalities in the Big Sky area. He built a big house up there in the Big Sky area. When I was a little kid, you could see one of those, hardly any houses in that Big Sky area back then. Now there's hundreds, if not 1,000, huge hotels and, you know, Four Seasons and all these five-star hotels were in there now, just and more getting built all the time. But there's only a few houses up in there. And but one of them was his, looking down over the valley and over the golf course right there. It's pretty cool. But yeah, that Jack Kuralt kind of made the Beartooth Highway really, 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 really famous. So it's really hip. It's a gorgeous drive. If you guys are got a bunch of time to kill and you guys have seen everything there is in Yellowstone Park, I've been up there my whole life and I've only driven it once. So, but it's a gorgeous drive. It just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes. 68 miles in and out. So, you know, heed my advice, and once you get to Pebble Creek, I mean, that's pretty much it. You're hunting for bears and wolves today, and even if you're not, if you're just driving up the Northeast Entrance Road and you're just kind of visiting Yellowstone Park and seeing that everything it has to offer and checking out this road and the Northeast Entrance Road, you don't need to go any further than this. It's just driving through trees past this. That's when I go visit the Lamar Valleys, that's as far as I go is Pebble Creek. I don't go any further northeast. I always turn back around, and I say this over and over and over again, and I say repeat it in the guidebook a bunch of times too. It is amazing that when you head back the way you came in just 20 minutes or 30 minutes, or it's unreal what you see on the way back that you didn't see on the way up. I mean, you might see a bunch of bison right by the road that just weren't even there a little while ago. They don't ever seem like they move, but they're just stealthy as all get out. Bison are just super stealthy. They just kind of appear out of nowhere. It's weird. You'll go down the road, you'll see about 5 or 10 cars pulled off on the side of the road, there'll be a bear right there. It's unreal. I swear, it happens 90% of the time I'm driving around in the park. If I come back the other way, it's amazing. I always see stuff that I didn't see on the way in, or I was like, I just drove right by it, or it was in this little valley, or it was off to the right down the hill a little bit that I couldn't see when I was on the opposite side of the road. It's amazing what you'll see on the way back. All right, you guys got to remember, there are 600 plus black bears in Yellowstone Park. There's right at 150 grizzly bears in Yellowstone Park. There's only 100 wolves, and they're divided up into 8 packs. So if you guys see a wolf or a grizzly bear in Yellowstone Park, you're really, really doing good. I mean, you probably ought to whip out of town and go play the lottery when you get back, or go back to West Yellowstone, hit one of those Keno machines. And a lot of it depends on when you guys were visiting Yellowstone Park. So, you know, out of the 5 million roughly people that visit Yellowstone Park every year,
4 million of them come in July and August in the hot summer months, and a million come in the early season, and a million come in the fall season. But in the springtime, and up until about July 1st, that's when the best time is to see bears in Yellowstone Park by a long shot. Like I mentioned in some of our other podcasts, we have that competition that whoever sees the most bears in Yellowstone Park wins free t-shirts and caps and all that stuff every year from us. And last year, this guy saw 12 bears before lunch, and so that's an amazing deal just by following the tips in the guidebook. But he came at the end of May, the fourth week in May, right before June 1st. And that's why he saw all these bears, because all the bears were out there teaching their cubs how to climb trees and all that yada, yada, yada. So that's the same time when Lisa and I saw those eight bears back over on the road going back towards Mammoth over there. We saw eight black bears in about, 20 minutes. So that's the deal. It's easier to see them in the springtime, because in July and August, they simply hide in the trees, and you're not going to see a lot of bears when it's really hot outside. So, but in the guidebook, I give you all the places where you guys can find bears, and there's a great place to find bears, especially grizzly bears, over near the canyon area. But we cover all of that information in the guidebook for you guys. So, but anyway, just I hope you guys have the best of luck. But if you guys are visiting in August, your chances of seeing a grizzly bear are getting to be slim and none, because they get up into the high country and they go eat these moths way on the eastern end, way up high in the Absaroka Range where there's no roads back there. So you're hardly ever going to see a grizzly bear in the middle of the summer. But never fear, Teddy is here to the rescue. You still might get that Dad of the Year award. So here, I'm going to give you guys a little inside tip of a little teaser about where you can guaranteed find some really cool bears up close and personal. In the guidebook, I've got a place where you are guaranteed to see a grizzly bear in a really cool natural setting, and it's not a zoo or anything like that, but I give you all that information in the guidebook. So if your little girl's in the back seat crying her eyes out and she's all mad at you because you promised her she was going to see Smokey the Bear in Yellowstone Park, then you know, it's really, really cool, and it's really, really well done, and you will end up being a hero, I promise you. All right, so everybody have a great time on their Yellowstone vacation. And remember, this podcast, we are just completing the one chapter in the guidebook called The North Loop, Bears and Wolves. And so we're just kind of giving you guys some interesting stories about, you know, that forest fin treasure and the stuff as you see as you're driving along that otherwise you would never know as you're kind of driving through the roads of Yellowstone Park. So remember, the guidebook is the cake. These podcasts are just a little icing on the cake and a good place for me to tell you guys some funny stories. So, all right, everybody have a great time, and I practice what I preach. I will see you in the park looking for some bears in May and June. I promise you, we spend a lot of time up on that North Loop because I like hunting for bears just like everybody else. I'll see you guys around. Thanks much. Bye-bye.